It's time for What's Up with Steve Abel from the Green Party.
Morena, Steve, kei te pehe koe.
Kei te pai, kei te pehe a koe.
Kei te mahirihira aho. I'm curious, inquisitive, to hear your thoughts on some of these topics. We've got a lot to talk about today. Thank you for joining us. Okay, shall we start with the current government's repeal of the 2018 oil and gas exploration ban that's just been passed? What will this mean?
I mean, it's a wild example of how hell-bent the slot are on not taking climate change seriously.
Mm-hmm.
When we brought the ban into place, it was celebrated as visionary around the world, and it was, because it was a recognition that if we're serious about climate change, we need to leave oil, gas and coal in the Earth's crust, not even extract it, let alone burn it. And that was the boldness of the decision that was taken in 2018. The other really notable thing is that for some significant time before then, big oil majors have been coming to this country looking for oil and not finding anything, relinquishing their permits and leaving.
True.
So in fact, you know, ExxonMobil, Statoil, Anadarko, Shell even had all sold up their operations or relinquished their permits before the 2018 ban because they weren't finding anything of interest. And the gas supply has been dropping for a very long time. So for us to be reacting to it, you know, well after 10 years since it's been showing that we're running out of gas, is also an example of terrible energy planning on the part of subsequent governments. We should have been overbuilding renewable for 10 years to get us off our dependency on fossil fuels and also to give us energy security and resilience.
That's the thing, you know, it takes time to move a nation from one form of energy to the other. But, you know, how long ago do you think we should have started investigating alternative electricity sources?
So I was at Greenpeace in 2013, and we did a big launch of a report on the Rainbow Warrior that year, saying that, you know, we need this massive boost of renewable energy investment. You need 30,000 new solar houses over the coming 10 years. We needed to be doing that then. And the decision to ban oil and gas was a fantastic one at the time. We advised the government, it was in the Labor government, right, you need to seriously back renewable energy. And if you don't break up the electricity market, separate the generator retailers, you know, then you're going to have this ongoing problem that those big gen retailers won't build enough new wind and enough new solar, and we'll end up with energy problems. And that's exactly what we do have. We do have a kind of a more tenuously placed energy system. It's not because the gas is running out. The gas has been running out for a long time. It's that they haven't planned for that obvious fact.
Mm. Resources Minister Shane Jones has said that the ban was pushing power prices up. Is that true?
It's not true, and the way to understand that is because the reason we've had an undersupply of renewable energy is because the power companies benefit from including coal or gas in their electricity mix. They can then sell the renewable energy like hydro and wind, which is much cheaper to produce. They can sell it at the higher price, at the price of coal. So they all want to add a bit of coal into the mix so they can charge us more for the electricity that we get, which is terrible. This is exactly why commercial enterprise operating something that's basically a necessity, which is energy, is unsustainable. We need to find other ways and treat energy as a public good, and ideally these power companies should be running as not-for-profit. Why should people be making money off the back of people who are shivering in their living rooms and can't afford to keep their houses warm? So that's something that we will change as the Greens. We'll break up the generator retailers. The other thing is that to deal with the challenges of climate change, we have to grapple with this problem of us being dependent on fossil fuels. So how do we do industrial heat, which, you know, gas is used for? How do we do, you know, peaking and deal with intermittency from wind and solar? We have storage, you know, hydro is actually great storage. We already have these massive batteries. Effectively, the hydro dams are huge, big batteries, because you can switch them on and switch them off. The challenge is when you have a dry year. So that's the challenge we have in Aotearoa and New Zealand, is if you don't get a lot of rain over a couple of years, then the dams get low. And that's the big structural challenge we have. But there are solutions to that. There are other ways. ways of doing storage and make sure that we can retain energy ready to turn on when we need it. We're in an incredible position to be to decarbonise our transport fleet. We should be electrifying everything, basically. It's crazy that people are still putting in place gas for power purposes. We have a massive wind resource. We have a huge underutilised solar resource. Those things need to be backed at the state level to make sure that we have energy resilience and have a genuinely clean electricity system.
Yeah, and one that's reliable, you know, even in the face of climate change, particularly with those drier years that we've been having. I wanted to move on to Christopher Luxon's recent comment that the government will no longer bail out those affected by natural disasters. I mean, what do you feel about that response?
It's kind of amazing that with one hand they're saying they're going to look for more oil and gas and they're going to dig up more coal, they're going to destroy the Denniston Plateau and they're going to dig up Rotowaru coal, and even an important liquid natural gas potentially, which is hugely expensive and climate polluting. At the same time they're saying you're not going to deal with the consequences of extreme weather events, which is what happens when you burn fossil fuels. And so the paradox of that for the start, it's a major challenge we have, is that a lot of low-lying parts of the country are susceptible to sea level rise, susceptible to flood inundation, susceptible to, you know, water, rivers breaking their banks. We have to think very differently about how the country's set out. This means whole communities need to move to higher ground, basically. That's a big challenge. It's a national challenge. You can't just say, if your town happens to be built in an area that's susceptible to flooding, like Westport, for example, on the west coast of the South Island, you're on your own, you know.
Yeah.
That's basically what he's saying. It's like, no. And, this is a problem across communities, across the whole country. It more disproportionately impacts lower income communities or poorer communities. So it's another example of, you know, if you can afford to get to higher ground and find a place to live, you know, where you won't be troubled by floods, good luck to you. Mm. You've got the money to do it, and let the devil take the hindmost if you can't afford it.
Yeah, I mean, he does, in this response, he did sort of acknowledge that climate change is a long-term issue and that we need sort of more sustainable solutions, which I guess we can all agree on. But does that come across as a little bit hypocritical given the recent decisions like the oil and gas exploration ban?
Absolutely. It's total hypocrisy. It's the existential challenge of our time in every part of our lives. Mm. Like, people think of climate change as maybe an environmental problem, but actually the biggest risk to human health over the coming century is climate change, you know.
So
the worst predictions have a huge number of unnecessary deaths of people across the planet over the next century as a result of climate change. So
true.
If we're not dealing with it at every level, we're not taking the problem seriously.
So these high-risk communities, what would the Greens' approach to this be?
Well, you have to have an actual adaptation plan. Yes, there's an element of making sure that people are fully informed about what the risks are in their particular area. Mm. So if people are looking to go and live in a place, they need to know that they're in a floodplain. And we can do relatively good predictions on how frequent that floodplain is going to be in flood. I live out in West Auckland and in Henderson Valley,
yes,
where we had the Auckland anniversary floods. It's actually not rocket science to say, well, you know, that's a low-lying part of the catchment, and if there's a lot of water come down, it's going to go down there, so we know it's going to take out houses that are right by the river in Henderson Valley. So it's understanding where it's going to happen. And then it's actually at some point doing community transitions. If you had a house flooded out in Henderson Valley, maybe it's not a good idea to spend, you know, hundreds of thousands or even millions of dollars refitting that house and leaving it where it is. Maybe you look at retreat, you know, and like there's a big plan for how we can turn a large area alongside the river there into green space, which becomes public space that's used most of the time as parkland or recreational space. But people aren't living there, so when there's a big weather event, people can go to the safety of their homes, and if the water comes through there and takes out a whole lot of land, there's not a lot of, a whole lot of houses that go with it. It involves that sort of level of planning, and it has to involve some degree of public investment. There is an element, you know, of at some point, if you have all the information before you and you decide you want to build your house on a steep, slippy slope that's, you know, not liable to, you know, falling down or in a really flood-exposed part of the country, but yeah, you know, it's going to cost a lot of money if we're going to have private bailouts of every individual land and homeowner, which, let's remember, it's a privilege to be a land and a homeowner. Anyway, so why would they get a bailout, but the people who are renting the house that got flooded and lost everything they owned don't get any sort of bailout? Just the landowner gets the bailout. So there's already an inequity risk with that. So you have to take into account all of those things. And yes, it is a complex problem, and I'm not saying it's a simple solution, but we have to work on it together.
Yes. Yeah. Just quickly, we are running out of time, but I do want to gauge the response from the Green Party on the NCA program being scrapped.
Yeah, I mean, we need an education system that meets the needs of children and of young adults. We are diverse creatures. We need different ways of learning. We have different ways of learning. And I remember I was at high school in the 80s. Even then it was recognised that the exam system had a lot of flaws in it, and that assessments were a better way of understanding over the course of a year how a child was doing in terms of, you know, their understanding of certain knowledge areas, but also giving them a sense of confidence in what their strengths were and what they were able to do. I really struggled with reading. I couldn't, you know, I was dyslexic, I couldn't read. I had to be learned through phonics when I was 8 years old. I didn't do math year 12, so they're now going to make that compulsory. I feel like this sort of one-size-fits-all approach and treating schools as just a pathway for creating workers in a workforce as opposed to a means of opening people up to be confident in their abilities to find their own way in the world is, you know, a step in the wrong direction.
Yeah, it definitely feels as though teachers as well are feeling like they haven't been consulted enough on this decision.
Yeah, I saw just last night that Māori educators have come out and said 6 weeks, you know, that's a community that's been terribly failed by our education system over decades, and through the, you know, Kura Kaupapa schooling system, Māori took it into their own hands and said, we're going to sort this out. We know how to educate our own. And that's something that NCA, not NCA, I mean, NCA has its flaws, let's be clear, like, you know, it's good to have a look at these things, but doing it in such a quick way is not the way to get a lasting solution. And let's remember, you know, National tends to want to pull out these quick fixes that take everyone's attention and use up a lot of resource to an already really stretched educational workforce. And it seems to be another way of causing, you know, confusion and tension and stress that distracts people from what they're actually wanting to do, which is educate children.
Right. Well, thank you so much for your time, Steve. It's been a pleasure chatting, and thanks. Very insightful chat.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
All right. We'll catch up next month.
Awesome. Thank you,
too. Bye.
Thank you, too.
That was What's Up with Steve Abel from the Green Party.